I'd love to just welcome everyone to tonight's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is using the climate opinion maps to educate our decision makers. With us tonight, we have two esteemed presenters, and I'm so honored to have the chance to introduce both Dr. Jennifer Marlin and Eric Fine. Dr. Marlin is a research scientist in the School of Forestry and Environmental Studies and produces the very Yale climate opinion maps that we are going to review tonight. Her research focuses on the social and physical dimensions of climate change, particularly extreme weather events and past climate changes. And on the social human dimension side, she uses surveys, experiments, and modeling to understand how people perceive and respond to hurricanes, heat waves, and other climate-related changes. Eric Fine is originally from New Jersey, but was mobile for 15 years as an outdoor educator, taking people on outward-bound expeditions through the Americas and Europe, and watching glaciers recede in Patagonia over 10 years inspired him to pursue a Master's of Environmental Science at Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies, which he finished in 2016. His current focus with the Yale project is studying and improving the impact of the climate opinion maps, as well as creating similar tools for other countries internationally. Thank you both so much for being with us tonight. We are so honored to have your expertise. And tonight's learning goals are threefold. So if we've done our job well, hopefully attendees after the end of this will walk away understanding the underlying statistical methodology used to create the Yale climate opinion models, as well as be able to explain the map's new updates to their target decision maker audiences, and also consider further applications for how to best use Yale's public opinion data in their own advocacy. And we'd love to invite you to all start thinking about how have you used these maps in your own advocacy work locally. We'd love to hear from anyone on the line about how they're doing this non-traditionally outside of a kind of typical lobby meeting or influencer meeting with your local endorsers. So we'll prime the pump and invite you to share those at the end of the presentation. And the last slide I'll just share to give us a roadmap of where we're going to go in the hour ahead before passing it over to our presenters is the agenda. We're going to start with an overview and some larger strategy. We're going to then look at the current state of climate change opinion in our country. We'll then focus on the importance of clear, repeated messaging and how we can accomplish that as climate advocates in CCL. Then Dr. Marlin is going to focus on the data and the model that we'll have a chance to be able to really understand the details behind and explain in our own meetings. And then lastly, we'll really highlight how people have used the data in their own meetings and share that with each other. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and we will get started. The floor is yours, both Jennifer and Eric. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight. I'm Eric, and as Brett was just mentioning, about 4 or 5 years ago was when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do about climate change and decided to become a grad student and start to study how people think about these issues, mostly because I saw that as having a multiplying effect of being able to help all different kinds of organizations and help create in a way, paradigm shifts by picking the right messages and messengers for the right audience. So then a few years ago, I was talking to a bunch of the folks at CCL because I was studying how they were using our Yale climate opinion maps and what kind of results they were getting and how we could help them improve those results. So I got to know a few folks on the phone. And someone reached out to me and said, we've got this guy going around the country showing Facing the Surge, which was a documentary that featured CCL. They said, Eric, would you help organize a screening at Yale? And I had slowly been getting to know CCL's approach and also saw it as having that multiplying effect by both being bipartisan and by pricing carbon, and saw that that would just multiply the effect all over the economy and society. And so I got really excited and said, okay, well, if I'm going to host this screening, we should start a chapter. And so I am the group leader for the Greater New Haven chapter of CCL and have been for the past 2 years. I've been lobbying and working on CCL for the past 2 years. Very excited about the work we do in CCL and also the work we do here at the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication. So to be able to talk to you about this is bringing those two worlds together for me. So excited for it. As you know, CCL talks about knowing your audience, both knowing your audience when you're talking to people in your community who might want to become volunteers or who might want to better understand climate change and carbon pricing and carbon fee and dividend. But also knowing your audience when it comes to talking to a member of Congress. So you get the sheets with the background of this member of Congress. In both of these cases, and when you're talking about any topic, the more you can know your audience, the better you can get across your message. And so that is one of our key focuses here at the Program on Climate Change Communication. What do people in the United States, and we study other countries as well, how do they perceive climate change? What do they understand? What do they misunderstand? How do they see the risks associated with climate change? What policies do they support? And what are the barriers for greater support and greater action? How does all of that then vary across society, let's say in the United States, from audience to audience. And with all that in mind, we then do experiments where we take different messages and messengers and see what impact they have on different kinds of audiences. So let's get started and we'll start to dive into some of our work. Here's one of the most basic questions that we ask. How many Americans think that climate change is happening and human-caused? It's interesting to get a national number on both of these questions, on all of our questions, but you're not usually talking to the whole nation at a time. You're talking to people at your farmer's market, and to your member of Congress. So it's even better on these types of questions to try and get to a smaller audience and understand what they're thinking. So before I dive into what the answers to these questions look like at different scales in the United States, you need to always frame this by having in mind what the climate scientists themselves say. So you've probably heard this number before. 97% of climate scientists agree that climate change is happening and it's human caused. That's pretty amazing consensus. One scientist from NASA was just saying, we actually have better consensus on this than on the fact that smoking causes lung cancer. So the American public, though, in general, only 57% understand that it's happening and it's human caused. Pretty big gap there. But then you need to know, okay, you're looking at more specific audiences. Are you looking at Maine? Are you looking at California, DC, Texas? And what might it look like at those levels? A lot of the times when you can zoom in, it might surprise you. It might be higher, lower than you expect. So let's just zoom in to Texas right here. So Texas, did you think this? They're pretty darn average when it comes to the United States on this question right there. I don't know if that's a surprise for you or not, depending on how well you know Texas. And then it's interesting to be able to then figure out, well, Texas is not homogenous. It looks different everywhere you go in there. So what might it look like to zoom in even closer? Let's go to Starr County. Starr County, 67% of people, so way higher than average, way higher than in Texas, It's right on the southern edge of Texas, Starr County. So that's one of the highest 25 counties in the United States in understanding that that humans are causing climate change. In Texas, four of the top 25 counties that best understand this are in Texas. Who knew? When you can zoom in and get at that level of detail, you can find all kinds of pieces of information that help you better strategize around your communication. Just to step back and look at the big picture for a sec, how do you leverage public opinion data to help your decision makers? So what we want to do is figure out all this research that we do and provide you with. How do you implement that when you're talking to your member of Congress, et cetera? And then also, to put it in the perspective of CCL, what is the goal of your campaign in CCL? And what is the congressperson's role in achieving that? Where is the decision maker now? You have lots of notes on this from past meetings on the issue. And where would you like them to be? And what is your ask for the meeting? We're going to now zoom in with a little bit more detail on our national surveys before we go deeper into the subnational results. 7 in 10 Americans think global warming is happening. So there's only 14% of people in the United States that think it's not happening. Pretty small group right there. But that's not anything about the cause there. That's just, is global warming happening? But then when we zoom in and look at where the parties are on this and different political ideologies, there's only one group, conservative Republicans, that do not have a majority that believe that global warming is happening, that understand that global warming is happening. So 40%, though, of conservative Republicans understand that global warming is happening. So we see polarization in a lot of the kinds of stats that I'm showing already. But one of, I think, the golden linings of our research is that despite polarizations on these types of questions, when you actually start asking people about the solutions to climate change, there's really amazing bipartisan agreement on a lot of the solutions. Good news, especially for CCL, looking at carbon pricing. 71% of registered voters support requiring fossil fuel companies to pay a carbon tax. Let's look a little bit more in depth at this. So the exact question was, do you support the idea of requiring fossil fuel companies to pay a carbon tax and use the money to reduce other taxes, such as income tax, by an equal amount? So not exactly carbon fee and dividend. I mean, there is some overlap there, but it's not exactly the same. Someone already sent in a question saying, will you ever ask exactly about carbon fee and dividend? And it's tricky. If you think about it, a lot of people have never heard of the concept of carbon pricing to begin with. But so they never heard of the idea of carbon pricing. So for us to try and, in a few sentences, get across the idea of carbon pricing, and even more specifically, carbon fee and dividend, and then say, what do you think? That's a little fast, and it's hard for us so far with the word, with different types of wording that we've tried, to actually be satisfied with that. We keep on experimenting with slightly different wordings on getting the concept across. So why hasn't this happened yet? Why haven't a lot of the solutions been implemented yet? It's pretty complex, but this slide right here shows one of the factors. So yes, people are worried. 62% of people are either very worried or somewhat worried about global warming, but only 21% currently say they're very worried. So to get global warming to the top of someone's lists of priorities, for what Congress should deal with right now, it's tricky given how low that percent is right there. So next, I want to go into when you're thinking about your audience. Some people say, well, can't we just split them into those that believe global warming is happening and those that don't? And we've found that that's not actually, that doesn't capture the nuances within the U.S. public. What does capture it more is splitting them into six groups. And we call these global warming six Americas. Starting at the alarmed on the left, those are people, probably everyone on this call right now, probably most folks in CCL, who say global warming is happening, it's human caused, I'm worried, the impacts are happening right here and right now. To move to the next group, concerned, those are the folks that say, yes, it's happening, yes, it's human caused, but I think the impacts really are far off in the future, or maybe only in developing countries. The cautious, they say, oh, maybe it's happening, maybe it's not. I'm kind of a fence sitter. I'm just, let's be careful just in case. Disengaged, what's global warming? Never really heard about that or given it much thought. Doubtful, I don't think it's happening, but if it is, it's not human caused. And dismissive, these are the folks that are firmly convinced that global warming is not happening. They might think it's a hoax, and have other ideas, and they are allowed and speaking out about this. Yes, you see that they're only 9%, but it often seems like they're bigger because they're very well represented in Congress and in industry often as well. Sometimes I'll throw up this slide and not have those little bubbles, and I'll ask groups, well, which one do you think is the largest group here? And they say, disengaged is one of the most popular answers. And then I'll say, well, which do you think is bigger, dismissive or alarmed? And they say, huh, dismissive, definitely, way bigger than alarmed. But looking at these bubbles right here, between alarmed and concerned, that's half of the country right there. And dismissive is only 9%. It's only 9%. There is amazing potential in these numbers right here. That group of alarmed right there, if you do the math, it breaks down to 44 million people, 44 million adults in the United States. How many members does the NRA have? I think it's like 2-3 million, something like that. So if we have 44 million people that are alarmed about climate change, as we get more and more organized, which is happening a lot thanks to CCL, we can take that power and help sway what Congress is doing. So one of the questions that we ask of these different groups is, if you could ask a climate scientist anything, what would you ask them? And so the alarmed and concerned say, what can I do? Cautious say, how do we know it's human caused? And the doubtful, how do scientists know that climate change is real, as well as the dismissive? Good to keep in mind these kinds of questions, especially in talking to different members of Congress that might fall amongst these different groups right here. This is just going back a little bit to the potential that I was talking about in 44 million alarmed in the United States. Another question we ask would you be willing to join a campaign to convince elected officials to take action to reduce global warming? And we find that 3% say, I'm already doing that. 10% say, I definitely would. And then 22 probably would. That's 34% right there. The main reason they haven't yet, that's another question we ask them, no one's asked them to. That's where you come in, CCL. That's where we can ask them. A lot of people all across, they are ready for you to approach them and ask them to join a campaign. There are 44 million of them. throughout the United States.
So Eric was telling you about the importance of knowing your audience, and that is one of the key tenets of good, effective communication. And a second key tenet is to keep your messages, once you have your message and you know your audience and you're ready either to deliver tailored messages or just a single broad message that will reach all your audiences, you want that message to be simple, clear, and then you want to repeat it over and over and over and over again. And you want to repeat it by a variety of trusted sources, because as I'm sure you all know, not everyone responds the same way to the same messenger. And the messenger is really important. So this is a kind of mantra that's come out of the corporate marketing field and also public health campaigns, who learned how to teach people to wear their seatbelts and quit smoking. And it's what they use to try to get people to eat a good diet and exercise and so forth. So simple, clear messages, repeated often by a variety of trusted sources. This is just an example of a CCL message. This is a message I just quickly put together, kind of synthesizing the five bullet points and the overarching strategy that CCL is enacting. So in this message, it says a CFD, and first of all, you wouldn't want to start your message with CFD. You would want to say carbon, fee, and dividend and spell it out. A CFD policy could reduce carbon emissions to 50% of 1990 levels while adding 2.8 million jobs to the American economy. It's effective, good for people, good for the economy, bipartisan, and revenue neutral. This is a good message. It's detailed, so maybe this is appropriate with the numbers in here for a decision maker or your senator or staff. You might want to use this message. But for the general public, this even is too long and too detailed, because most people wouldn't really know what 50% of 1990 levels means, for example. And it just isn't really kind of snazzy and easy to remember. Here are a couple of other examples that break it down a little bit further. If you were talking about your policy, then you could wrap it up by saying this policy is good for the economy, good for the climate, and good for America. Something like that, that you would want to and be able to repeat in a variety of ways. And then finally, if you're in Nebraska or some conservative district, you might even go for the other one. This approach will create jobs, save lives, and clean our air. In short, it'll make America great again. And it's true. But you get the idea. The message really just has to be distilled and memorable. Once you have your message, and then you know your audience, and then we're giving you some additional statistics that reflect what people think in your particular local area, then you'll be well-armed to make a good case, a strong case. And that's what we're trying to help you do with the Yale Climate Opinion Maps. And I'm just going to give you a quick tour now of the tool. These are screenshots here, so we don't have the interactivity, but you can maybe follow along online if you're playing with the tool. But basically, we have these national surveys we conduct twice a year, and they give us very, very helpful national numbers, like this one. 62% of adults think global warming is affecting the weather now. And this tool we just updated in August. And so this is one of the new questions that we've added. Especially today, we really need to know what's going on at finer scales than the national level, as Eric was talking about earlier. And so the climate opinion maps can tell us what's going on at the state level. And we can see, for example, that in Kansas, 57% of people, even in Kansas, think that global warming is affecting the weather. In fact, majorities, which you can tell a state has a majority if it's yellow, majorities in almost every state except for Wyoming and West Virginia believe global warming is affecting the weather. I was a little bit surprised by this map, to be honest. And then you can, of course, go to finer scales, congressional districts, metro areas, counties, Here I'm highlighting the 15th district in Texas, where even in Texas, 60% of people think global warming is affecting the weather. So there are a variety of questions we've added. I'm going to show you those in a minute. But I wanted to just walk you through a few of the risk perceptions here, because some of these maps, even if you're not looking to pick out individual numbers for a county, just looking at the map can give you some important insights. This is the percent of people who think global warming will harm them personally. And to me, this map really shows why this issue is tough, because it's not a priority for many people. They don't think, it's not making them miserable today, here and now, right? It's not like in my backyard, or it doesn't feel that way, even though it actually is in many cases. But in reality, that doesn't necessarily matter, because we don't have to be confronted with problems, you know, right here, right now, in order to know that we have to do something about it. Most people now in a majority of counties across the country think that global warming is harming people in the United States. Even the blue counties here, just below 50%, just below majorities. Most people definitely believe now that it's going to harm future generations. So many people really do get it, even though they don't feel or think that they're experiencing right now. And in fact, these maps are current through our spring 2018 survey. Soon we'll be able to incorporate the fall survey data, although that's not going to happen until after the election. But I think we're going to see a change given the hurricanes in particular. That we've been experiencing. The fact that people really do see that this problem is affecting people in the US and that it's affecting future generations and developing countries and plants and animals, which you can explore those questions online, that explains why you see strong oranges and yellows on this map, which is about whether people prioritize the environment over the economy. And so often you'll hear the sort of false trade-off given or the false choice given, well, you know, if we enact carbon policies and try to control emissions, we're going to hurt economic growth. Now, of course, that's not true. We know we can do both. But that, nonetheless, even if people are confronted with the choice, they will pick the environment. And they'll pick it overwhelmingly. They will even choose it in Kansas and Texas and Oklahoma and some of the most conservative states. So this is a good question to keep in mind. And there's good data here online. And then one other final question. This is more of the good news that Eric mentioned earlier. And that shows that there are majorities in almost every county who support taxing fossil fuel companies, while equally reducing other taxes.
If I can interrupt for a sec, that last slide also, if you just look at the congressional district level, every congressional district has the majority of people who support taxing fossil fuel companies while equally reducing other taxes, which also means that every state has a majority that support this concept.
So this is just a little screen grab here showing you some of the new questions that we've added to the tool. We added 12 new questions, and most of those are in the policy area because that's where we really are trying to focus more. Eric explained a little bit about how it's actually very difficult to formulate a policy survey question that applies to everyone in the across the country, and that isn't sort of too sophisticated or too wonky for your average American to understand. So we do our best to come up with kind of a simple, clear policy choice, and then we get responses to that. But we are constrained because it has to apply to everyone. It has to be very understandable on the survey. The map you're seeing in the background here are the results for people who believe that Congress should do more to address global warming. Interestingly, if you go to should my governor do more, local officials, the map becomes a little bit more blue, but there is strong support for Congress, citizens, and corporations to do more. Okay, so I am going to take a few minutes here to just give you a little bit more insight into the model itself so that you all feel comfortable understanding where the data come from, at least, and hopefully I can help you explain it a little bit better to others. So this model is based on a large survey data set. We've interviewed over 22,000 people. We've combined that poll data with demographic data from the Census Bureau, with location information, so we know where people are, and also with election data, because this issue, as you know, is very political. So if we know, you know, if a state or county or district went for Obama, then that's really good information. We put that in the model. And we even consider emissions, CO2 emissions, because that affects people's economy or perceptions of the economy, perceptions of this issue. It might make them more concerned about jobs. That would affect their views about global warming potentially. And you can see that. That's why we can capture some of the variation in Wyoming and West Virginia, for example. Those are states that depend on, you know, mining and oil and gas industry. So that's why those states are a little bit lower in their views. So we use all that data, the polling data, the census data, the geographic and election data. We use that to model opinions for individuals, and then we use it to model for groups of people. So for women, for men, for people with different levels of education, and for different racial groups and ethnic groups. Those are the main categories. So once we have the estimates for the different groups, we can figure out from the U.S. Census how many people in each of those groups exist in each state or county. And so we basically can weight our model results by the different types of groups that exist in each state and county. So I'm going to explain this again. I have two more slides to explain this. But because we're using not just the survey data, but we're also using these other data sets, we have a little bit larger margins of error than surveys. The survey itself has plus or minus 3 percentage points, but we have to add a bit more uncertainty on top of that. So we end up with plus or minus 7 or 8 percentage points, depending on which geographic area you're looking at. What's happening is that we are losing a little bit of precision, but we are keeping our accuracy. And so we know that the results of this model are very accurate because we went and checked. We checked using independent surveys in 4 states and 3 cities. We spent actually over $400,000, about $500,000, checking the model results to make sure that they were right. We got it spot on. In fact, we've even checked census tracts now, and we can do this for census tracts. So bear with me for a minute. I'm going to just walk you through an example. There's a little bit of math here. But basically, just to summarize the model itself, and this is just an example. This isn't the exact model, but it's close. But what we do is we try to predict, let's say, how many women, if you look at, it's the 5th row down. In Alabama, female, 65 and over, our model can tell us, well, 66% of women over 65 in Alabama believe that global warming is happening. That's the highest group, the highest demographic group with the strongest opinions, or the most of those group believe that global warming is happening. And then we know that there are 369,000 people of that type in Alabama. Great, thank you for this. And so then we can multiply 0.66 times 369, and we get 243,221. That's how many women over 65 in Alabama believe that global warming is happening. And then we total up those last two columns and divide, and we end up with 57% of all people in Alabama, because we've made estimates for every subgroup. So now we know the state total for Alabama. And so the amazing thing, and it's a little bit creepy almost to realize this, But we are predictable. We're predictable animals. And our gender, our race and ethnicity, our education levels, where we live geographically, who we vote for, all of those pieces of information are highly predictive of what we're going to feel about an issue. So we don't actually have to talk to every single American to get a good sense of what people believe in a particular place. And this is how surveys work, right? Just like we sample lakes or air for air to make air quality generalizations, we sample people. You can sample traffic patterns. You can sample cities. You only need to look at, you know, 200 or 300 before you start to see what the pattern is. And that's what we're doing. We're just doing it with people and their views about global warming. If you are asked, well, how can I trust these numbers? Why should I trust these numbers? There are two responses to that. One is a kind of technical response, which is that, well, we developed a sophisticated model. It's a widely used model. It's based on a very large data set, and it was validated and checked by, you know, 6 independent surveys. Actually, 7, 8, I have 9 independent surveys now. But that technical answer, you know, that will persuade some people who want to know a little bit about the details. But there's also an underlying question there, which is, why should I trust you? Or, you know, why? And maybe that's what someone is asking you. And if that's the case, then you might be better off, instead of giving the technical answer, you might be better off pointing to examples in your community or to conservative leaders who support the results, who support acting on climate change, who support sustainable initiatives. And so maybe this is a messenger issue, really. Like, they need to know, do other people like me think this too? And so there are really two parts to it, to addressing that. So finally, just a quick note about the results from people, from CCL members who were using YCOM in 2017 Lobby Day. It was used in almost half the meetings, apparently, in last year's Lobby Day. 115 Democratic congressional offices, 123 Republican congressional offices, 2 independent. And then 80% of the people who used YCOM used it during the actual meeting. And so YCOM and this information apparently is useful and, you know, to helping give our elected officials the information they need to understand what their constituents want and what they think. And so that's really what we're trying to do here.
I just wanted to highlight that CCL has been an active and just enthusiastic partner for years with the wonderful research that Yale has done and is continuing to do. The whole slide really shows how we've incorporated that in our actual lobby meeting preparations. And you can see that the biography on the left then includes, this is an example for Representative Corbello, the actual action on climate opinions for his district on the right-hand side. And we've had success not only organizationally with using these, as Jennifer highlighted, in our lobby meetings across the board, but we also have used them as a wonderful way to start or share information with our letters to the editor or other print media outreach or social media. We've had great success in highlighting this to gain those local endorsements that you've highlighted are so critical to have that trusted messenger brought in. And we've also done a wonderful job of being able to depict the importance of having hope and banding together and working collectively for solutions and really breaking through that spiral of silence, especially in rural areas where people often feel like they might be the only ones that are holding these opinions or these concerns about the need for climate action, really having success in highlighting climate maps, the full story with that. So I just wanted to briefly speak to the fact that there's many ways of leveraging these outside of decision maker meetings. If you have questions, we'll have a robust forum discussion offline after tonight that we'd love for you to contribute to.
We have a lot of people actually already write to us from different CCL groups around the country asking specifically about their districts, or they've looked at the climate opinion maps already and say, I see that this is a pattern in my district. How do I work with that? How do I do that? So feel free to write to climatechange@yale.edu if you have any more questions. Also, in the frequently asked questions on the Yale climate opinion maps, themselves. There's a bunch of information as well as a link to the paper from when this first came out explaining in more detail exactly how they were put together.
Again, just a huge round of applause. We're getting a lot of feedback in the chat window, but both to Jennifer and to Eric for giving your evening. I know it's already late here on the East Coast, so we really appreciate you staying in the office so late to educate all of us. But with that, I will unmute all lines. We thank you so much. As Marshall loves highlighting, you are the cavalry out there making the change happen. You are the ones that are going to get us over this hill. And we're so grateful for you being on the line tonight to arm and educate yourselves with the most current and relevant data out there. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night, everybody. I look forward to seeing you in D.C.
Good night. Thank you. See you in D.C.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great